www.hey.org or 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-HEY-KPFA. Flashpoints. Take it away.
This is KPFA, KPFB Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno.
From Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, a special edition of the show, Haiti in the Crosshairs. Troops from Kenya given the go-ahead to join helicopter special forces from the U.S. to reoccupy Haiti. What next for the freedom-hungry people of that beautiful country? All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I'm sure many of you know that May 18th, Haitian Flag Day, was International Day of Solidarity with the people of Haiti. And they released a message. I want to share some of that message with you before we jump into the show and take a look at what's happening in the U.S.-sponsored destabilization genocide going on in Haiti. Destabilization policy that has marked the U.S.'s response to the people of Haiti for decades, deadly decades. So this is what the statement says. The situation in Haiti today could not be more dire. While the puppet government of Ariel Henry has fallen, the reign of terror continues. During this year alone, more than 1,500 Haitians have been killed as a result of paramilitary violence. Journalists, clergy, peasant farmers, students, workers, market women, vendors, and others raising their voices now in protest have been met with beatings, incarceration, rape, assassinations, and mass killings. Femily Lamalas, the People's Party of Haiti, has repeatedly characterized the situation as, quote, hell on earth. Joining us to talk about this are two good friends of this show who know a great deal about Haiti and have been fighting alongside this revolution by the Haitian people for many years. Joining us is our good friend Pierre Lebeausier, Haiti Action Committee, and also joining us is a longtime human rights activist, co-founder of the Haiti Action Committee, Robert Roth. And we welcome you both back to Flashpoints. But once again, these are not good times. The people have been paying attention to another U.S.-supported genocide in another part of the world. But clearly, this is a parallel structure in many ways. Welcome back, Pierre and Robert Roth. We're happy to have you back with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dennis.
Well, it's good to have you with us, Pierre. Let's begin with what it's sort of looking like on the ground for you. Give us a real picture, because we certainly don't get it in the corporate press. What do you hear on those long-distance phone calls late at night?
Yes, let me start by saying that, by quoting the father, or at least paraphrasing the father of someone who was abducted by the Haitian police about a month and a half ago. His name is Sonny Abelard, that's the young man, and he is about 40, 42 years old. He has a young daughter. And his wife had passed away about a couple of months before. So he was on the streets talking to a friend, and when in his own neighborhood, when the police picked him up, and he has never been heard since. And from what I was told, that very afternoon, and that was at about 1:30 p.m., and it looks like other people or other young people were also picked up by the police. And so it's this kind of occurrence. And since then, what I've heard is activists, community activists also have been picked up. Some of them have been killed, others incarcerated. And, you know, without any attempt to take them in front of a judge or anything like that. So it looks like on the one hand, we have a very rogue police force in Haiti, which is very brutal and corrupt. Now, my saying that doesn't mean that every single one on the police force in Haiti is that way, but there is, according to various reports, the statistics are very high. At least 40%, if not more, of those cops are very corrupt and brutal and connected with the gang. So in addition to that, on this over the weekend, or at least from Thursday on, the so-called gangs, the paramilitary death squads, attacked two neighborhoods in Port-au-Prince. And we are talking last week. And the community, one of them is Fort Nacional, where they actually went in there. And this is happening as the helicopters and the big airplanes are landing, big military personnel and all kinds of fancy equipment, and also members of the U.S. Military. Supposedly they are building a base for the Kenyan troops that are scheduled to be arriving in Haiti. And so right Very close by. Fort Nacional is not too far from the airport, that neighborhood. The killings were taking place. Many people were killed, and also homes were being burned. This is being conducted by the so-called by the death squads. They have formed something called Vivre Ensemble, Living Together. So it's the G9 Federation under Cherizier and others that have combined now into a bigger grouping called Vivre Ensemble, Living Together. I don't know who's living together. Maybe it's them among themselves, and destroying men, women, and children in Haiti who are the very poor, people who are barely eking a living. And there is also another community called Gracier, which is a little bit outside of Port-au-Prince, but as Port-au-Prince is expanding, Gracier would be looked at as one of the suburbs, you'd say, of Port-au-Prince. But this is also a very poor rural community where you have the working poor trying to make a living there. And they attack that community as well, burning many homes. And from I've heard different figures, over 4,000 people were put in the streets. Others have quoted more. They have said as high as 10,000. You hear different numbers. And so many are seeking refuge in other communities and what have you. I received a video showing me, showing all of that taking place. So this is happening as you're hearing about all those troops that are supposed to be coming to Haiti, but also the airplanes. As of last Thursday, over 21 big aircrafts have been unloading all kinds of equipment. So one of the things that Haitians are saying is that this is not something that is to help the Haitian people, that this is a product of the occupation of Haiti, the 20-year occupation that started with the coup d'etat against President Aristide and has not let up, the repression since that time by the UN forces, by the UN-trained Haitian police force, and many of those so-called gangs who are actually, many of them were created by policemen themselves who created those gangs and lead many of them. You know, this is a matter of record. By many, they themselves have spoken. Some of the gang affiliated, and I use the term gangs because that's what people hear, but they are really paramilitary death squads that are carrying out a systematic terror and repression against the population.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're talking about Haiti. That's the voice of Pierre Labossiere of the Haiti Action Committee. Also joining us is the longtime human rights activist and expert on Haiti, human rights, and many other things, is Robert Roth. Welcome back to Flashpoints, Robert Roth. It's good to have you with us. It is a very terrible time in Haiti. Can you say just a little bit more? I think it's always important that we sort of contextualize the violence. Please say a little bit more about how all that we're seeing now and the immense suffering and the militarization, once again, the occupation, is unfolding. It goes back to the kidnapping of the duly constituted president of Haiti 20 years ago, right?
That's right. That's right. On February 29, 2004, a U.S. organized, along with Canada and France, coup against the democratically elected government of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide was carried out. And ever since, Haiti has been assaulted by one illegitimate regime after another. And in the process of the coup and the subsequent UN occupation of Haiti, called MINUSTAH at that time, these paramilitaries were empowered by one government after another to do their bidding. So, for example, when the PHTK, which is an extreme right-wing party, came into power in 2011, sponsored by the U.S., Hillary Clinton had been in Egypt during the Arab Spring and came all the way back to Port-au-Prince to demand of the Haitian Electoral Council that Michel Martelly, who was the leader of the PHTK party, be included in the runoff, in a runoff presidential election, even though he had come in third. And so she urged them to bounce him up to second so that he could run for office. And this was completely, once again, an example of imperial intervention in the affairs of a supposedly independent nation. He became the president, and along with him came full impunity for drug trafficking, for gang rape, for massive violence against the population, and it served the interests of the PHTK government. Martelly developed a compound filled with paramilitaries who would attack opposition neighborhoods during protests against the government. So they were weaponized. These gangs were weaponized by the government to use against the population and also to enforce, to facilitate drug trafficking at the port, to control major communication centers in the country. And now, 20 years after the coup against Aristide, we have what Fahmy Lavalas called the hell on earth, which includes a population close to half of which is suffering from the euphemism of food insecurity, 1 million Haitians facing starvation, schools and hospitals being attacked and overrun and ransacked, with total impunity. And so the population, civil society, has been destroyed in Haiti over this 20-year period. And it's been a period of foreign occupation led by the U.S. And in this period, in the face of this incredible violence in the country, which has made it impossible for people to go out on the street, for market women to sell their wares, for children to go to school, in the face of this, the U.S. solution has been to bring in more foreign troops. In spite of the entire history of foreign occupation, which has been hellish for Haitians. And so the plan right now is for the Kenyan military, really it's they're called police, but 2,500 Kenyan police, along with military from Benin and from some Caribbean countries, all to put African a black face on a renewed occupation. And they're scheduled, it could be this week. It could be on May 23rd. We don't know. There's been a million different, dates given. But Biden is hosting, in the middle of Biden conducting the, you know, helping to conduct the genocide in Palestine, he is hosting the president of Kenya, William Ruto, for a state visit on May 23rd. And this is the first visit by an African head of state to Washington since 2008. And it's no coincidence that it comes at the very moment that the Kenyan forces are preparing to disembark in Haiti. The U.S. is going to spend $300 million at least in financial backing, giving logistical support, communications, air power, intelligence sharing. And they've just signed a five-year defense cooperation agreement with Kenya. And the Kenyan forces are notorious for their brutality against their own people. In this last year alone, there were mass protests in Kenya over the spiraling cost of food and fuel, and over 30 people were killed by Kenyan police in these demonstrations. Hundreds were arrested. Many were beaten and tortured. And it's important to understand that Kenya, it's not an accident that the U.S. has reached out to Kenya for this operation, because Kenya is the linchpin of the attempt by the U.S. to penetrate Africa militarily, economically, and politically. And so AFRICOM, which is the U.S. military command in Africa, has been working with the Kenyans in the so-called war on terror, building them up as a counterinsurgency force. And that's who's now headed to Haiti to do what? To protect the population? No. To destroy opposition to the right-wing government and the business elite? That's the goal of this renewed occupation. And so we oppose it, like, fiercely. When there is an invasion, we will be in the streets demonstrating against it. And it's part of a long, long history of foreign occupation, including the U.S. invasion of Haiti in 1916, the occupation that led to the, and including the occupation that enforced the coup against Aristide. So we see it as just another round of the same old foreign intervention and destruction of the Haitian nation.
That is the voice of longtime human rights activist Robert Roth, co-founder of Haiti Action Committee. He's on the line with us, along with Pierre Lebossier. The situation on the ground is not a pretty picture. The United States government has one more round of regional destabilization, I would say, in pursuit of resource control. You know, we often get confused, Pierre and Robert, that we hear a lot about the poorest country in the hemisphere. It's certainly resource rich. The problem is that freedom and self-determination have been a constant threat for the last, I don't know how many, couple of hundred years to the United States government. Maybe it starts with the Monroe Doctrine, but it's old, and it's just as deadly as it was, Pierre, under the Duvaliers. I noticed, Pierre, in a moment, I want to introduce some sound we have. We actually have Nora Barros-Friedman and myself interviewing Kevin Pina on the ground in 2006, you know, dodging bullets. But you see, it's the same cycles. We see it in Palestine with the Israelis and the resistance there. And here, there is an interesting parallel structure. But and we want to get to that. But I, Pierre, what is Lavalas doing now? They have, as a practical matter, are a part of a council that does appear to be dominated by the U.S.
Yes, and one thing I wanted to raise also about May 18th is that why we picked that date to call it the International Day of Solidarity with Haiti is that on May 18th, 1803, that's when our foremothers and forefathers came together in a Congress. You see, it's not just Flag Day where people wave the flag and have a good time. And they made a solemn vow. That's when they made the decision to found, for the foundation of the nation of Haiti and to break with France, not only to abolish slavery, but also to claim independence, to claim the land for themselves and for their progenies. And so this is, so it's very dear, it's a very dear thing to us and to the grassroots movement in Haiti. Now, the resistance to the coup has never stopped for the past 20 years. And for me, Lavalas has been that symbol of resistance. What we are seeing here about this new government, this was originally a proposal by Fermi Lavalas way back in November 2018, when they published it. They had been organizing around that. What it is, it's an appeal to all the forces, all the sectors of Haitian society, to look at the situation, to look at how the country was becoming a hell on earth for the people of Haiti, for young men and young women fleeing the country. Actually, their leaving the country was encouraged by the government of Martelly, Jovenel Moïse, the PHTK governments that Ariel Henry, that Robert talked about. They were encouraging the mass migration. And so Fermi Lavalas put out this call. And in Creole, it's called Salut Public. People have shortened it to Salut Public. But really, it's crisis and solution. If people Google, go on the HaitiSolidarity.net website, they will see it, which is the website of the Haiti Action Committee, Crisis and Solution by Fermi Lavalas. What did it call for? It called for, it was an appeal for the population, not only to mobilize, but also to have a plan for the rebuilding of Haiti, by calling on honest, capable, competent Haitians from all sectors of society to form a government of transition that would last for 36 months, where they would these capable individuals picked from, provided by different sectors of the society, would take over the government and really the various ministries to run them to the benefit of the population. We are talking education, we are talking healthcare, we are talking food sovereignty, and so on, the judicial system, the justice system, the security, the police, to run it to benefit the Haitian people. But the U.S. has fought against that. The U.S. and the core group of countries that have been in charge of Haiti since the 2004 coup d'etat, they've been steadfastly opposed to this and have been the leading opposition to this. And so they, what they revert to all the time is they want one dictator, Papa Doc Duvalier style, and they want to change the Haitian constitution that the people of Haiti had voted overwhelmingly, had crafted and had voted overwhelmingly for back in 1987, which guarantees a lot of rights for the Haitian people, but also control over the natural resources. You see, this is important. And that's a problem for them because legally it prevents a lot of takeover by those multinationals or those pirates, international pirates, to come and rob the country. And the only way they can do it is by the force of arms. So that's explains also what we are seeing, what they are calling gangs, but that are really their death squads, that and the police is working along with them to impose that system, that terror. So Fermi Lavalas, with the movement moving forward, so finally, with the help of so many of our brothers and sisters internationally, the U.S. had to fall back on this, the proposal that Fermi Lavalas had put forth, but they did it as the movement for it was definite, but they infiltrated a lot of their people, a lot of their pawns, their minions in the government to make them be in a dominant position numerically. But the people of Haiti understand that, and they still demanded that Lavalas be part of it because it was originally our program, and that the battle had to be fought on this arena, in this arena. And so that explains the situation of what's going on, because there was a lot of confusion about it, and that's what it is. But the people of Haiti are totally seeing it through the eyes that the struggle must continue. The struggle has to take place in every arena, not just in the streets, but we have to be at the table where those battles are being fought as well. All this is happening within the context of a UN Security Council resolution. You see, the UN Security Council took a resolution, I believe it's 2699, if I remember correctly. And that resolution demanded that there be a multinational force way before this government, the transition government. They had to accept the idea of a transition government. But they've been trying to derail it since that time. And so the battle is taking place at that level as well. So that UN Council resolution really binds whatever government is in charge in Haiti to, they have to abide by it. However, the masses of the people are saying, hell no, we are not the government. We are not going to accept that. And so people are totally opposed, because we know what's behind this. It's just another way of taking over the country fully, imposing what they want to impose, which is no good for the people of Haiti. And that's what's happening.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And Pierre, just, we're not going to be able to play a whole bunch of this, but I think it's important. We've got this sound from, I believe it's 2006-2007, of Nora Barris Friedman, I'm on this somewhere, and Kevin is documenting the situation on the ground. Could you just say a little bit more about what's happening?
Yes, but before I forget real quick, I want to say that part of the resistance is that I've heard that there will be buses going from New York on the 23rd, when President Ruto from Kenya will be at the White House. Haitians will be coming from different parts of the U.S. to go and protest. It's being organized in New York. That's what I heard as of today. So the resistance continues. But for the footage, this is when the U.N. forces, at that time they were led by Brazil, and the community of Cité Soleil, as well as other communities, Bel Air, also were protesting against the coup d'etat, demanding that their vote be respected, especially since they knew the people who had taken over just wanted to go back to destroy the life, the hope that they had for a new Haiti and everything that they had built, a new judicial system and all of that. So they were, at night, as people were sleeping, the UN forces were using helicopter gunships to shoot it through the roof of their homes. Many people died in bed, and people were being fired upon. I happened to be on the phone with a young reporter, Jean Ristil, and he was covering it, and I could hear, he was describing to me the scene and was being hit and the bullets and everything. So that's what we'll be hearing.
All right, let's listen to this 2006-2007 tape where Kevin Pina was on the ground for Flashpoints, as he was for many years, ducking the bullets. Listen to this.
In Berkeley, I'm Nora Barrows Friedman. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We turn our attention back to the unraveling situation in Haiti. Last Friday, at approximately 3 in the morning, 400 Brazilian-led United Nations occupation troops in armored vehicles laid siege once again to the impoverished community of Cité Soleil. Eyewitness reports indicate that indiscriminate gunfire from heavy artillery began at about 5 a.m., continuing into most of the day. Thank you. as 17 people are said to have been killed, as well as over 30 injured. Humanitarian aid workers described a gruesome scene, including when UN troops shot a 6 months pregnant woman in the abdomen, killing her unborn child, and families were shot in their beds when helicopter gunships fired into their homes. Joining us to talk about this latest massacre in Haiti is our special correspondent, Kevin Pina. Kevin, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thanks, Nora.
So can you describe the scene for us on Friday in Cité Soleil? This was the site of a massacre that happened last July 2005 that you reported on very heavily for us. Talk about what happened this time.
Well, we've been receiving images. We've been receiving videotapes. I've been in touch with people on the ground who've described the situation to me in detail. And it's, again, clear that the United Nations is responsible for having targeted unarmed civilians in what they claim were raids that were aimed at quote-unquote kidnapping bases inside of the seaside shanty town of Cité Soleil. This actually began on December the 22nd, on a Thursday, when they first, the first of several waves of attacks on the community began. At that point, we understand that more than 350 troops, including Uruguayans, Chileans, and Paraguayans, and Bolivians, went into the seaside shantytown at 4 a.m. in the morning. They went in shooting, firing heavy caliber. We heard that there were M-50s that were being used. We heard that M-50s were being fired from helicopter gunships down at the community, and it was total chaos, total mayhem. Certainly you've described it in terms of young children, pregnant women being killed, gunned down by the United Nations.
Lelen. Comment ça dessous?
Mais va pour monsieur. Hein? Mais ça va. Ça que c'est.
Galini. Semble bal hélicoptère.
Monsieur.
Semble.
Comment lelen?
Qu'est-ce que
Comment vous allez?
Soyez-vous libres.
Soyez-vous libres.
And you've been listening to a few minutes of a report that we did with Kevin Pina, Nora Barris Friedman with us on Flashpoints, following Kevin Pina through the fields of misery once again created by U.S. policy, destabilization policy. Now we're watching another round of it, and that's what we've been talking about today. And for the last 35 years, I guess you have to say, Pierre, on this show, I just want to ask you, what do you want to see happening now? What is the resistance look like from where you sit? What are you looking at?
Yeah, in different areas, in different areas, people are resisting the situation. So it differs from one community to the next. And so depending on how well-organized the people are, they are able to resist these assaults by the death squads. One thing I wanted to present, to point out, is that this one, at that time, there were some cases against the UN, and the UN faced a lot of criticism for what they had done, for what they kept on doing in Haiti. And we have several videos over the years of their terror tactics against the population. But one of the reasons why this time it's supposedly not a UN force per se, but it's an authorization to use a multinational force. You see, they are trying to hide their hand, you know, and so by playing games with words. But Haiti is under the control of the core group of countries, and I've mentioned that before, led by the U.S., France, and Canada, and there are six others that are part of it. And they use all kinds of subterfuge, all kinds of machinations to pretend that it's not them, but it's other people. It's the Haitians who are not ready to govern themselves. So the U.S. had set the fire, and now they are pretending to come in, supposedly to help the Haitian people. But people in Haiti aren't fooled by any of this, you see. So what, let me let Robert, I know Robert has some ideas of,
And also, Robert, feel free to tell us a little bit more about Haiti, and please also make the connection. I know you're deeply engaged in terms of the movement to end the genocide in Palestine, and you've been out there being a part of it.
Right. Well, you know, first a little bit more about Haiti. It's interesting, Dennis, when you play back that piece from, what was it, 2006 or 7?
Right. Yeah, end of 6, I think, yes.
All right. It just indicates the nature, like the prolonged nature of this fight in Haiti. I mean, the Lavalas movement, the grassroots movement that includes Lavalas, and it just comes from the people in these communities that have been under attack. This has sustained itself, you know, over the last, since the overthrow of Duvalier in 1986. And this is in spite of all of these machinations, in spite of occupation, in spite of terror, in spite of stolen elections, in spite of like two coups against, you know, the democratically elected Aristide government. And in this period, it's going to involve like a multifaceted fight to bring democracy in a situation that is antithetical to democracy. You can't have democracy. You can't have democratic progress under foreign occupation. Colonialism and democracy are antithetical to each other. And so Haitians right now are faced with a continuing occupation, which is about to get worse, and they're faced with the U.S. attempting to control this transitional council because they want to maintain the power. They want to, like, even though the demands of the people have been for a democratic transition, the U.S. plan is to have a transition that maintains the power of the elite in Haiti. And, you know, like you said, Dennis, you know, like a lot of people, when they think about Haiti, they always ask us, well, why Haiti? What is the U.S. so interested in? And it's interested in Haiti like it is all around the world, in its resources, in its labor. They want cheap labor out of Haiti and have been building, like under these occupation governments, have been building like free trade zones, sweatshops. They want to dig up the country, which is rich in mineral resources, from gold to marble to bauxite. And they want to control this strategically located island in the midst of the Caribbean, which they view as their backyard, and they have viewed that ever since, you know, the Monroe Doctrine in 1823. So, you know, and the other thing that they want to prevent, and the reason that they were so, so disturbed by the rise of Aristide, is they want to prevent a good example, like a people's government in a strategic country like Haiti. And everywhere that there's been a progressive government, like a government committed to social change, to educating people, to building hospitals and healthcare in rural areas, wherever they've seen that around the world, you know, wherever they've seen a challenge to elite corporate rule, they have considered it a threat. And they've considered Haiti a threat forever. So I just wanted to say that, and that we're in another stage of a protracted struggle. Per Haiti Action Committee, we've been around for over 30 years. And in that period, we've always been in solidarity with the movement, and we've seen the rise and fall of that movement over and over again. But what we've seen is the resilience of that movement. And so we expect in this next round, whether it's in the fights within the Transitional Council or whether it's the reaction to occupation, we expect that same dynamic grassroots activism that fuels the movement in Haiti for all of these years. In relation to Palestine, I think that it's important that we have an anti-imperialist view, that it's not just that there's solidarity with Palestine over here, solidarity with Haiti over here, solidarity with the Philippines over there. The other side doesn't operate like that. They have one strategy that they apply everywhere. If you're looking at what Blinken is doing, for example, he's been meeting with the Saudis. Then he's been trying to encircle China, and he's been going to Kenya to promote this new occupation of Haiti. So that we have to see that, and then we have to see our solidarity with all of these other struggles, and of course, in particular, Palestine, which is at the center of the world struggle right now. But we have to see them connected, and we have to make those connections within our solidarity movements here.
Beautiful.
I was able to go to a number of these encampments on college campuses. I was a student activist in the late 1960s. And so, of course, it brought back memories. But what impressed me the most was the connections that these students were making, to understand that Palestine represented, both of what's happening in Palestine, both represented the evil of Zionism, but also the strategy of U.S. empire. And they made connections, not just in terms of other places in the world, but here at home, the same U.S. government that, has been taking land from indigenous people here, supporting the takeover of land of indigenous people in Palestine. Those connections, right? And when we talk about Haiti is an example of Black liberation. And the fact that Haiti is, an African-based country has always been a source of a problem for the U.S., which has never wanted to see Black people free, either here or around the world. So I think that when we look, we can't just see it as over to the side. We have to put it into an overall analysis about how we look at the world.
And of course, South Africa is in the middle here, and life goes on. We're just out of time. I can't tell you how much I want to thank both of you and for many years of service and important information and always being willing to take on this most important and difficult struggle in this hemisphere. Appreciated Pierre Lebeausé, of course. It's been an honor. You must have been, I can't imagine that we didn't interview you by the second show we were on 35 years ago, but we've been doing this story with you, and we continue to stay with it, and we appreciate you as well. Thank you both,
Dennis,
for joining us.
I want to say how much I appreciate you, how much I appreciate Flashpoints. You've been there all those many years, never let up, always bringing truth to the audience, and that has helped the struggle in Haiti tremendously. So thank you, and I urge people to support Flashpoint, support Pacifica, support KPFA. It's so important. So thank you so much, Dennis.
Well, thank you.
I want to just add one thing. We know, in the darkest times in Haiti, when so few people were concerned about what was happening or focused on it, we always knew that Flashpoints was a place that would call on us and give us time and give us the space to really educate about what was going on in Haiti. And we know that here, and people in Haiti know that. And so the work that Flashpoints has done is really invaluable. And, you know, so we do. We honor the show, and we do. We urge people to donate as well.
Thank you. Thank you both for all the good information. Stay safe, and obviously we're going to keep talking to you about all that's going on. We're going to keep our eye on it. Be safe, both of you, and everybody else. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And what an honor it is to be able to provide these microphones to the people who really deserve them, who really need to have a voice, those who have been hurt, disparaged, undermined, have overrun, bombed, murdered for their resources. This show is a frontline human rights reporting show. We have been covering Haiti and Palestine for decades. It was interesting to have Nora, to hear her in her Flashpoints role interviewing Kevin. And that's beautiful. Of course, now she is with the Electronic Intifada, extraordinary source for information. But that's, you know, I referred to this at many levels, Pacifica KPFA, as a university and as a university in the airwaves. And we both train people. People come through the network to do all kinds of other stuff. Some stay, like me, and really believe in the freedom of this kind of speech and using it for social change, information as power. But it is a very special place. And if you think about it as a university, you know, where we consider great ideas, great books, poetry. And I have to say, it is beautiful to see Nora. I want to let you know that she is going to be at an event that is coming up that I've got somewhere around here with Jesse Strauss, Israelism Film, the film Israelism. They've got a Thursday, May 30th screening. It's a $40 contribution. What am I doing to my computer here? I hope you can still hear me. I hope. It's a $40 contribution. I love, you know, it's the next generation. I love that we have somebody like Nora Barros Friedman in our community as a major producer now, host of information about what's going on in Palestine. And we have this cross-fertilization. And it's one of the beautiful parts the way in which this university in the airwaves works. It really is a special place. We want to keep it going. We've been going for 75 years. Let's try and keep it going. One of the ways I keep myself going is to write poetry and to love poetry. And I was excited to notice that a friend of this show, somebody who stood up when a bunch of crazy outsiders invaded our board and tried to sell this beautiful radio station, Joan Baez was one of the people who showed up to fight for this network. And it was an extraordinary opportunity. We've had a couple of chances to interview her for the show. And she's got a beautiful Can We Celebrate Poetry with Joan Baez and continue to do our frontline work. How about that? It's a fun drive. The number is 1-800-439-5732. You can get Joan Baez's new book of poems, When You See My Mother, Ask Her to Dance Poems, When you see my mother, ask her to dance. These are poems, beautiful poetry. While Joan Baez has been writing poetry for decades, she's never shared it publicly. Poems about her life, her family, about her passions for nature and art have piled up in notebooks and on scraps of paper. Now, for the first time ever, her life is shared, revealing pivotal life experiences that shaped an icon, offering a never-before-seen look into the reminiscence and musings of a great artist. Really, beautiful poems. Can I get interest you, have you stand up for Free Speech Radio? Are there any angels out there? Because I could use you all today. It would be great to have a rush of support for Free Speech Radio. You think that our 35-year coverage, drumbeat coverage of Haiti, giving voice to that struggle, do you think that matters? Did we do the right thing? Will you do the right thing with us? Will you lock arms for Free Speech Radio? 1-800-439-5732. I have to admit, I sort of had the wind knocked out of me yesterday. Yesterday was a really hard day when I had heard about Larry Bensky. No, I didn't always get along with Larry Bensky. And a lot of us fought with each other about very serious ideas. But I had a chance to work extensively with Larry. I was honored to work on the Iran-Contra hearings. My work with the program Undercurrents and Robert Knight, we co-hosted the first week of the broadcast, and every day in the morning we opened up the broadcast of Iran-Contra coverage with a half-hour, hour program about the various issues, the various investigations that Robert and I had been working on, Robert Knight and I had been breaking for all kinds of other places for several years in terms of the Reagan administration, Contra drug dealing, a whole bunch of extraordinary stuff, and I learned that Larry was a very smart and great journalist, and of course Pacifica Radio would be his home. And I also had a chance to work with him on, we co-hosted the SNL scandal hearings in Washington, D.C. And that was sort of amazing. That's actually written up in an L.A. Times piece somewhere. But Pacifica Radio covered these hearings. It was so revolutionary, you know, to do that and to have somebody like Larry, I don't know how long, they went on forever. And that would be something that Pacifica Radio could do. They committed to cover these hearings in which finally somebody was calling attention to the dangers of the Reagan administration. And Pacifica Radio covered those hearings, and Larry is missed. And, 1-800-439-5732, when you see my mother, ask her to dance. Those are poems by Joan Baez. Anybody, by the way, let me say, 1-800-439-5732. Is there an angel out there? Anybody who gives for any amount gets a free sound structure, free with any donation confirmation in the mail. You get Al Nakbar. This is amazing. This is a four-part documentary of the 1948 Palestinian catastrophe and establishment of the State of Israel. It really is extraordinary. You want to educate yourself about this. Get some serious context, any amount of money. But I do need you to stand up now, and I would hope, I am hoping that we can have a comeback from yesterday, because we did, we really did. I have to report to you, I want to be honest, that yesterday I had the worst day in my funding history here in modern KPFA fundraising. I'd like to do a little better today. If there are any Flashpoints angels out there who think that 35-year drumbeat coverage of Haiti is important, and to make the parallel structure and the connection between genocide in Palestine and genocide in Haiti, please call now. There is one beautiful caller on the line. We have raised $340. It is 5:54 in the afternoon. And we have a goal, again, we really do, of 3,000. So we've made 1/10 of our goal. It would be spectacularly fantastic to get a nice matching fund. Maybe you've got 25 or 50 or 100 a month you can give us. On the monthly basis, you can become a sustaining subscriber supporter. One beautiful person on the line. Oh, I'm really hoping that number two will be out there to hold your hand, number one, and that we can have a revolution in the radio and support that the work that we've been doing here for many years, this show for 35 years. We want to keep going. We want to pass it on to the next generation. Go check out this event. See this powerful documentary. It is worth checking out, and we would love you to check us out. But $40, and you get to see the great Nora Bowers Friedman. This is at the Parkway Theater in Oakland. It's 6:30 p.m. May 30th. Not that far from now. 6:30 p.m. May 30th. See this beautiful, meet these folks, the next generation of Pacifica, and the New World Order, if you will. See this documentary and learn something. Be a part of the Pacifica community. Meet your friends. Come on, join us now. You could, by the way, if you want to do something totally different, take the History Boat Tour on May 26th, $500 contribution. Go with your friends, meet friends at KPFA. Check that out. It's worthwhile. Rebel Airwaves, June 3rd, Liam O'Doyle, History of This Network. Check that out. But the real premium, and the thing that I'm hoping you're going to rise to, and right now we're at $340, it really is true. Second day in a row that we're on the low end. 1-800-439-5732. If you could stand up now for any amount, if you got a little extra, give us a little extra. This would be a terrific time if you can come up with a little extra. But $5, $10, $15, anything gets you the Al Nakba sound, and it's powerful. 1-800-439-5732. Come on, am I being too nice? It really is. I really do need you to stand up. We really do need you to join us and make a difference for Free Speech Radio. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, stop for a moment and stand, throw your fist in the air for Free Speech Radio. Take that action that nobody makes you take, but that your mind and your heart and every cell in your body tells you is the right thing to do. You know how important this network is, and we need you to help us raise money. Now, I am anxious to see these phones light up. Come on, number two, number three, number four. Where are you? 1-800-439-5732, kpfa.org. Miguel, did I hear you in the background? No, it's me. It's me. It's definitely me. 1-800-439-5732. We have about 2 minutes left. And we can, for the next, you can join us and keep calling even after we go off the air. 1-800-439-5732. Again, if the content, if the programming makes a difference to you, if you think this is the right thing for us to do with the radio station, to be the People's Radio Station, the People's Radio Network, then please stand up, call now, step forward, make a difference for Free Speech Radio. We've got about 1 minute left. Come on, folks. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 5732. I've got 30 seconds. I can't believe that I'm at $340. Maybe a couple of you are going to call after I go off the air for like $5,000 each. Three calls. Come on. 1-800-439-5732. Could this be a late rush? We've got three calls. How about 13? You can call now. You can get in right now. Right now. Keep calling right through the hour.